You're listening to 88.3 Southern FM, the sounds of the Bayside.
This is planet Earth. You're looking at planet Earth. Ba, 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 ba. This is planet Earth.
And we continue season 4 of our Planet Earth series, in which we look at how space technology is helping us understand our home planet. This is episode 51.
Earth below us, drifting, falling, floating, weightless.
On April the 17th, an Intelsat satellite, 40E in the series, was launched towards geostationary orbit. Attached to it was an instrument provided by the Smithsonian Institution in association with NASA. The instrument is called Tempo. And no, that's not the speed at which music should be played. It actually stands for Tropospheric Emissions Monitoring of Pollution. A function was held at the Smithsonian Institution to describe these instruments.
Now it's my pleasure to introduce the Director of NASA's Earth Science Division, Dr. Karen St. Germain.
Thank you so much, Ellen. It's so great to be here. All right. So I am thrilled to be here for the Tempo launch event. Tempo will join the family of 25 missions we have on orbit today. It's one of the four that we're going to launch over the next year. And, you know, I think of NASA Earth Science in many ways as NASA's best kept secret. This fleet of satellites are, each one of them is a specialist of some sort, and they're all observing different attributes, different aspects of the Earth system so that we can understand how the whole system works together. As the first ever Earth Venture instrument out of the Earth Venture program, the Tempo mission is a prime example of NASA's Earth Action strategy, or Earth Science strategy in action. It starts with, at the bottom of the pyramid, developing innovative technologies that enable new and better and more complete observations of our home planet. Those observations underpin the fundamental understanding of how the Earth system works. And when you understand, you can build predictive models that can then be put into the hands of those decision makers at all levels of government and in the private sector and in communities to make science-informed decisions. We call this the high-value science chain. And so from the bottom of the pyramid, new technologies and observations through understanding models, applications to solutions, and getting the information out. NASA has 50-plus years in Earth science and climate data archives. And as more federal agencies incorporate climate resilience, adaption, and response into their operations, NASA Earth Science is powering those programs. In agencies like NOAA, the Environmental Protection Agency, U.S. Department of Agriculture, FEMA, Interior, and more. In the case of Tempo, we're really proud to say that NOAA and the Environmental Protection Agency will be early adopters of the Tempo data to enable their missions moving forward. And of course, underpinning all of this is our open and accessible data, and not just the data, but the science and the information that creates transparency and trust in that information. So we're developing at the top of this pyramid the Earth Information Center, the first phase one of which will open in June, and that's intended to make our information, our science, even more accessible to people across the country and around the globe. So Tempo's data will be fed directly into the Earth Information Center and enable those activities. And finally, Tempo is helping NASA move to the next generation of Earth observation capability and understanding our climate. Again, we study the Earth as a system, the land, the ocean, the ice, the atmosphere, and how changes in one part of the system affect the rest of the system. So as TEMPO joins the other 25 missions, it will also form the foundation for the generation we're just starting to build now. And so that we intend to launch by the end of this decade, the Earth System Observatory. And so again, the Earth System Observatory will stand on the shoulders of the missions that we're launching today and those that have been operating for us. The Earth System Observatory will again be that next generation to ensure that we are as well positioned in 2030 as we are in 2022. And I want to end by echoing Ellen's comment about optimism. We have in our hands the information we need to make scientifically informed decisions that tackle the problems that are in the challenges that we're facing today. I, too, am optimistic. The entire NASA Earth Science team is there trying to drive forward well-informed decision-making as well as the fundamental science on which we build. So it is my pleasure to hand the stage over to Caroline Nallen to talk more about TEMPO Science. Thanks.
Good morning. It's great to be here. My name is Caroline Nallen. I'm a scientist at the Smithsonian Astrophysical Observatory in Cambridge, Massachusetts, which together with Harvard University forms the Center for Astrophysics. But this morning my job is to talk about TEMPO in more detail. So first, a bit of background. So we've actually been making these kind of air pollution measurements for over two decades from what we call low Earth orbiters. So the satellites that we're currently using are orbiting the Earth at about 700 kilometers above the surface and about 14 to 15 times a day. And these orbiters go over a particular place on Earth, usually at the same time of day. So every day we can get measurements, say, over New York City at 1:30 in the afternoon. But that's just one data point over New York over a day. And a lot is happening in New York City over a day. So we have two rush hours that we're not able to capture. And so the great thing about TEMPO is that for the first time we'll be able to make hourly measurements over North America. So we'll be able to see what's happening over a whole day as long as the sun is up. And the reason we can do this is because we're launching TEMPO on Intelsat 40E into a geostationary orbit. And a geostationary orbit is an orbit where the satellite goes around the planet at the same time that the planet rotates. And so we can essentially hover over the same location on Earth. So we can look at North America over the whole day. And the other great thing about TEMPO is that we're getting down to really high spatial resolution. So as well as this time resolution, we're able to, the first time, really see down to like suburban scales or neighborhood scales at hourly resolution. But what does it look like on a fine scale? There is one existing mission, a European mission, that can see almost as good spatial resolution as TEMPO, not quite, but it's, again, only once a day. So we're really getting down to these neighborhood scales now. So TEMPO is a mission that's involved a lot of people, but several hundred people have worked to make TEMPO a reality, from universities, government agencies, state and local air quality agencies, and industry, of course, and from Canada, Mexico, the United States, and even further afield. But TEMPO really was the idea initially of Kelly Chance, who's the principal investigator. But Kelly in the 1980s was one of the original developers of some of these low Earth orbit missions with a couple of European colleagues. And they were so successful that people started to think a few years ago, wouldn't it be great to put this into geostationary orbit? So geostationary orbit is a common orbit for weather satellites and communication satellites, but an air quality instrument measuring gases hadn't been there yet. So over a decade ago, NASA put out a call for science missions, and Kelly and some collaborators proposed TEMPO. And after a lot of work, it's ready for launch. Now, how do we actually make these measurements? And this is what I do at the Smithsonian Astrophysical Observatory. And so what we're doing is we're measuring reflected sunlight off the surface of the Earth, clouds, and the atmosphere. And the spectrometer breaks that sunlight into different colors. And then we use a detector to measure the strength of these different colors. And we can see what's in the atmosphere by the colors or the wavelengths of light that are absorbed. And we know from measurements on the ground in laboratories what the characteristic absorption features of different gases look like. And so we can't measure everything from TEMPO, so we're only measuring in the ultraviolet and visible regions of the spectrum. But luckily, there are a few air pollutants that have strong absorption in these regions. And there's several things that we measure. We don't have time to get into all of them today, but we have three main products that we measure, our gases that we measure, and those are, Barry Leffer next will talk in more detail about these and their various sources. But the first one is nitrogen dioxide. The second one is formaldehyde. So formaldehyde's not something that people think a lot about being in their outdoor air, but formaldehyde's really useful because it actually is a byproduct of it's a volatile organic compound. And when other volatile organic compounds break down in the air, eventually at some point they turn into formaldehyde, or formaldehyde is produced, and we can measure that from space. So we can use that information to infer emissions of other volatile organics. And volatile organic compound is a bit of a mouthful, but you are familiar with these. They're what make things smell often. So things like paint, or gasoline, or permanent markers, or even when you walk in a warm forest in the summer, it's volatile organics that you can smell. And the third thing that we measure is ozone. So ozone up high is great. It protects us from UV radiation and allows life to exist on Earth. But when ozone is at the surface, it's a pollutant, and it's harmful to humans and also to crops and ecosystems. And so next up, we have Barry Leffer from NASA headquarters, who will be talking more about the TEMPO measurements in greater detail.
Thank you, Caroline. It's a pleasure to be here today. And one of the things I wanted to stress is what you're seeing here is how TEMPO is going to be in geostationary orbit and scan from the East Coast to the West Coast during the daytime. And when it's doing that, what you're seeing here is nitrogen dioxide. And it's a byproduct of combustion. So when we're burning gasoline or coal or in diesel fuel to move ourselves around, or electric generation plants burning coal or natural gas, a byproduct of that activity is nitrogen dioxide, and it's harmful to human health, and it's also critical in forming. It's a primary pollutant. It's emitted from the smokestack, and it, in the atmosphere, it reacts to make ozone and formaldehyde, those secondary pollutants, but which are also harmful to human health. And so TEMPO is going to give us this ability to track chemical weather as it is emitted from sources and then transported downwind to other receptor sites. And so it's a really exciting opportunity to work with our other agency partners. The EPA and NOAA are part of the TEMPO science team, and we've been working closely with them to get the most out of the TEMPO data. TEMPO is not going to be in geostationary orbit by itself. TEMPO is looking at North America. Sentinel-4 is going to be looking at Europe. And the GEMS satellite, which is also built at Ball Aerospace, is a sister satellite to TEMPO, and it has been in orbit for 2 years. And so NASA and the European Space Agency have been working closely with the Koreans who launched GEMS into orbit, working on that data, calibrating the instrument, validating the sensor. And so because the GEMS instrument has been so successful, we have really high hopes for TEMPO. And the TEMPO science team is going to be doing some measurements this summer and fall after launch, doing air quality studies over LA, Chicago, and New York to help interpret the early TEMPO data set and continue to monitor air quality at the neighborhood scale for many years to come.
We have on the space show been at the Air and Space Museum for the Smithsonian discussion on the TEMPO instrument, the Tropospheric Emissions Monitoring of Pollution. And that was launched on April the 7th aboard the Intelsat 40E satellite. It's now in geostationary orbit, located at 91 degrees west longitude, and will be operational in July.
88.3 Southern FM.
Planet Earth is blue.
If I say the word SWAT, you probably think of a fly SWAT, what you do with those awful flies. But in the space world, SWAT means Surface Water and Ocean Topography, SWOT. Li Leong Fu is a project scientist with SWAT And he spoke at the American Geophysical Union in December last year.
Hi, I'm Li Lun Fu from the Jet Propulsion Laboratory of Caltech. I'm the project scientist for the Surface Water and Ocean Topography Mission, or SWOT. It's a great pleasure to speak to you about SWOT. What is SWOT? SWOT is a pathfinder mission using new technology to address transformative questions on weather and climate change and its impact on our environment, in particular the ocean and the surface water on land. What makes it unique is the next generation radar altimeter to measure the elevation of water surface in two dimensions with a spatial resolution 1,000 times higher than that of a conventional altimeter. The footprint of a conventional altimeter is the size of 1,000 acres, whereas the footprint of SWOT is only 1 acre, the size of the lot of a large house. For example, only lakes of the size of Lake Tahoe can be resolved by a conventional altimeter, but SWOT can resolve a small pond, as shown by the aerial photo. So the technology is radar interferometry. The satellite will carry two radar antennas separated by a 10-meter mast. The radar antennas look sideways from the nadir, allow the determination of both the range and direction of signals for computing the surface elevation over a 100-kilometer swath. So it produces a two-dimensional map of water elevation instead of a one-dimensional profile by conventional altimeters. SWOT measurements will address two key elements of the Earth system in relation to weather and climate, the energy and the water cycles. Ocean currents transport heat and carbon dioxide from the atmosphere to the deep ocean for long-term storage. If not for the ocean, the temperature at the Earth's surface would be a scorching 67 degrees Celsius. The CO2 concentration in the atmosphere would be twice as much. So it's critically important to assess the capacity of the ocean to continue absorbing heat and carbon. Climate change impacts freshwater supplies. Global warming is accelerating the rate of water cycle by increasing the atmosphere's humidity. The much more rapid precipitation and evaporation of water makes it difficult to assess the freshwater budget. So SWOT data would be used to make this critical assessment of freshwater availability. SWOT will also make unique observations of coastal oceans, estuaries, and river deltas with important societal benefits. About 10% of the global population is in the coastal low-lying cities threatened by sea level rise. Coastal cities are responsible for 20% of the world economy. Storm surges are encroaching heavily populated areas because of sea level rise. We need SWOT high-resolution measurements for improving storm surge models. Estuaries and river deltas are places where river meets the ocean. They are most vulnerable to climate change, causing saltwater intrusion, river diversion, and the landform change. High-resolution measurements by SWOT will improve the understanding and the modeling of the waters in estuaries and the river delta, hosting 5% of water population. This photo shows the complex water surface of the river mouth of Mississippi just south of New Orleans. The status of the mission, SWOT is a joint mission of NASA with the French Space Agency, CNES, with the contributions from the Canadian Space Agency and the UK Space Agency. The payload module of SWOT has been completed by JPL. It's now being integrated with the satellite bus in France. The full observatory will be transported back to the US for launch at the Vandenberg Air Force Base in California by SpaceX Falcon 9 rocket in November. The international science and application teams around the world are ready for this exciting mission. Thank you.
And SWOT was actually launched in December of last year. European Space Agency involved. This feature from them with the voices of the project team.
So for me, SWOT is water. SWOT is precision.
In one word, I would describe SWOT as beautiful.
SWOT stands for Surface Water and Ocean Topography.
SWOT will be observing the elevation of water surface in the ocean on the land. The water surface height will allow us to assess the water storage in lakes and stream flow of rivers.
Our water is one of our precious resources. SWOT is unique because it is the first global view of our ever-changing water supply on Earth.
SWOT's main instrument is called Cairn, which is the Ka-band radar interferometer. Cairn is what sets apart SWOT from other missions. It's a unique instrument that we're flying for the first time.
The Cairn instrument uses the two antennas, which are spread out on either side of the spacecraft, in order to bounce signals off of both of those to get a much larger view of the surface.
And being able to do it in very high resolution, higher accuracy, and also a wide swath so that we're able to measure large tracks over the Earth in a relatively small amount of time.
SWOT is a pathfinder mission using new technology to address transformative questions on climate change and its impact on our environment.
We're collaborating with CNES, the French Space Agency, for these programs, but we're also helping the global community to be able to contribute and collaborate towards making our home planet a better place.
SWOT will make our models better, and our understanding the water budget helps us be able to steward that precious resource.
If water is out of balance, we could face droughts, and it could also lead to floods.
SWOT is going to be observing water in oceans, and ocean science is essential for understanding sea level rise and climate change.
Now we are facing a time that we need to be very precise, therefore we can accurately predict what will happen in our coastal cities 50 years from now.
Understanding that it is a finite source and we can't rely on that forever is something that's really important.
I'm just so excited and can't wait to see how it impacts the lives of others.
Without really understanding the Earth, we cannot protect it, because we know that the missions that we work on are going to have an impact on our children and our grandchildren.
Parag Vaz is the project manager for SWOT at the Jet Propulsion Laboratory.
So SWOT is unique because it's one of those missions that combines technology really to enable new science. We have not really had, particularly for what we call hydrology, which is the surface water, we haven't had those kind of measurements available across the whole entire Earth in a consistent form. That's never been available. It's going to be new information for the global community, which is going to enable exciting science. We don't know some of the science that this is going to actually produce, but we know that it has tremendous capabilities, and it's probably going to lead to many new discoveries. Yeah, so SWOT really works on a new radar. And what is a radar? It's basically what we call an active measuring system that's bouncing a pulse of energy from space down to the surface on the water. That surface, particularly the water, is very reflective. So it's bouncing that signal back into space. SWOT, the satellite, is going to receive that. But the new technology in SWOT is that we're going to be able to not only receive it back and understand what one particular point that we're measuring is, but also how it's moving. So what's the slope of that water that we're actually measuring? So the height and the slope, and being able to do it in very high resolution, higher accuracy, and also a wide swath so that we're able to measure large tracks over the Earth in a relatively small amount of time.
SWOT is the Surface Water and Ocean Topography Satellite. It's an international satellite that's going to give us this complete view of the surface water here on Earth, what's happening in the lakes, reservoirs, rivers, and also in the ocean. It'll tell us about how sea level is rising along coastlines and in the open ocean, and really give us a good understanding of how surface water is moving about the Earth.
Our goal is to provide data, forecasts, watches, and warnings at some key locations, like the Willamette River in Portland, which is a major U.S. city that historically has seen some catastrophic floods. The better quality of the data that we have that feeds into our models, the better the forecasts are going to be, the more time that people will have to protect themselves and their property, and ultimately our communities. A tool like SWOT is going to help us with making these really difficult projections and predictions for the future.
This is one of many reservoirs here in the Willamette Valley in Oregon. It is a human-made lake. It is a reservoir operated by the Army Corps of Engineers. The water managers here, they use, you know, weather prediction, they use hydrologic models, and the hope is that data like SWOT might be incorporated into those predictions to help them better understand this water body's filling and we don't want to overtop the dams, might want to start letting water out really quickly. They have to make a lot of complicated decisions. When you get a big storm event, we want to keep the community safe in the best way that we can. So how do we best manage operation of these reservoirs in terms of putting water out downstream to prevent flooding at a larger scale?
In lots of states, there are, you know, hundreds, thousands of reservoirs, and many of those reservoirs don't have automated gauging available. And so these agencies have to kind of estimate how much water is in them and how that's changing. And with SWOT, they can just monitor that directly from space.
For us in Alaska, we have many, many rivers, and only a few of them are measured, or as we say, gauged. If we have data on when flooding is occurring or might occur, we can get crews out there to look at the bridge to make sure that the bridge and the associated roadway are still safe. If we can start collecting data on all rivers above a certain size remotely from satellites, it really opens up the amount of rivers that we can help understand what happens when they flood or how they flood. And that really improves our ability to manage our infrastructure and to design new infrastructure. That is where SWOT will really make a big difference.
One of the partners we're working with is the Department of Defense, and they're trying to fill gaps in the data that they have along the coastlines. Our military is obviously very concerned about what's happening on global scales, and they have installations across the globe. So SWOT will potentially provide an opportunity to fill in some of those gaps, allow them to make the impact assessments that they need for sea level rise in their facilities. So trying to understand and give them the information they need to plan for and then potentially adapt to these changes is really critically important.
Coastal wetlands like the Mississippi River Delta are extremely important because it acts as a buffer between us and the threatening ocean. With SWOT, because of its high spatial resolution, we'll be able to resolve water surface elevation right at the coast. So this is quite important because as sea level rises, the ocean will migrate into the land, bringing more salt into the land. So it threatens the infrastructure, the biodiversity in the wetlands along the coast. Hopefully, the types of models that we're producing can support how they decide to manage the river delta. And SWOT on its own will allow us to upscale these types of studies to the world.
Yeah, I'm really excited about the new information we'll get from SWOT and how we can start to couple it to some of the needs that we see, both at the coastal interface and also on land. I think we can potentially see some immediate impact once SWOT's launched in these communities.
So when you want to predict future climate, you want to start with the major players. And since Earth is the water planet, ocean is where you start. One of the critical climate questions of our time is to determine ocean's future capacity to effectively absorb and release heat back to the atmosphere. And you want to know it on a wide spectrum of frequency and scales, which SWOT would be able to provide for the first time, both the large scale and the finest spatial scales possible that we've ever seen before. And this ability to predict even the smallest changes in Earth energetics might be the mission that give us the answer to this most critical climate questions.
That was Nadja Schiffer, the program scientist for SWOT, and this has been The Space Show.